Thanks for downloading a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online. Now stay tuned for your 3CR podcast.
Freedom of Species would like to acknowledge the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation, who are the traditional owners of the land on which we broadcast today. We pay our respect to the elders of all of the lands on which we meet across Australia.
Hi everyone, and welcome to Freedom of Species, the show that brings animal advocacy to the airwaves of 3CR Community Radio. You just heard Sally with Out of the Pan with guest intersex advocate and speaker Paul Byrne Moroney. That was a really interesting episode. Sally finished with the song I Made 100 at the Backyard at Mum's by Greg Champion. And check out of the Pan with Sally every Sunday, 12 to 1, for pansexual, trans and gender diverse, polyamorous and queer issues, news and events. So I'm Lottie. I'm your host today, here by myself. Today I'm going to be talking about animal and human reproduction and adoption. So this is a bit of a sequel episode to a previous episode, Antinatalism and Humans' Impact on the Planet, that I did with co-host Trev on the 26th of July, 2026. So in that episode, we went into a bit more detail than I will today, defining antinatalism, which is the duty or the pressure not to procreate, not to birth children. Pronatalism, which is the opposite, the duty or the pressure to birth children. And then maybe a bit of a middle ground, reproductive justice, where everyone has a choice and truly has a choice, how many, you know, whether to birth children and how many. In that episode, we kind of questioned the idea of human depopulation as an environmental strategy. I cited some resources that human depopulation, the effects of that will be slow and relatively small when it comes to, for example, mitigating climate change. So we really need actions now to do so. So, you know, wide-scale veganism, electrification, renewable energy, things like that. Another previous episode of Freedom of Species that has touched on this issue of human population before is called Vegan Dogs and Cats / Human Population. It's the first 30 minutes or so of that one that deals with this issue. Regular guest Katie spoke on that episode about human population. That one's from the 1st of April 2018. So, check out those previous FOS episodes. This time I'm kind of going to take more of the angle of, if it's okay for us to birth children, why is it not okay, you know, from a vegan perspective, to breed domesticated animals like we do in factory farms or like we do, to keep animals as pets? Or vice versa, if vegans, if we think that it's not okay to breed domesticated animals in that way, why is it okay potentially, or is it okay to birth children? So starting off, I found a series of papers, academic journal articles published in the journal Theoretical Medicine and Bioethics, quite interesting on this topic. So two in particular of those papers, one is called Should Vegans Have Children? Examining the Links Between Animal Ethics and Antinatalism by the author Yona Rissanen. And then a kind of response to that one was by William Berlow, Why at least some moral vegans may have children, a response to Rissanen. And what I found interesting in particular and a bit of a takeaway from those is thinking a bit of a framework logic with which we can kind of think about, you know, why we might consider it ethical or unethical to breed human children and to breed animals. So what they outlined in those papers is, if we start with the first premise one, It's immoral to treat individuals who are subjects of a life as a mere means. And then proposition two, children and non-human animals are subjects of a life. Proposition three, when it comes to animals, and the way they framed it in the paper was factory farming treats non-human animals as a mere means. I think we could even extend this to breeding animals for profit. In general, treats non-human animals as a mere means. So whether that's to slaughter them to eat their flesh, breeding them to extract their body parts, to sell themselves or their offspring for profit. I think as vegans, it's pretty uncontroversial to us that the way animals are, breeding animals, keeping them confined, and then selling them for profit uses them as a mere means. And therefore, the conclusion that we can reach based on those first three propositions is that breeding animals for profit is immoral. So then if we think about this from, from the perspective of having children, so it's immoral to treat individuals who are subjects of a life as a mere means. Children are subjects of a life. And then that third proposition, does having biological children use children as a mere means? If you think the answer is yes, then, the conclusion this kind of series of propositions might lead you to is that having children is immoral. If you don't necessarily think that having children uses children as a mere means, you might not reach that conclusion. So I think the takeaway for me is that when it comes to breeding animals, it's pretty uncontroversial that we're using them as a mere means. We're not letting them be themselves, have freedom, live their lives as they would want to do, experience pleasure, have agency. Maybe arguable that some people's motivations for having children is kind of purely self-centered, and they might not raise their children in a way where they kind of allow their children to become their own person and have agency and, have freedom. Maybe this is just something we can question that, if you want to be a parent, how can you maybe, potentially become a parent in a way that that gives your child, that agency to live their own life, and it's not solely as a self-serving thing for you. I think it's tricky because, ideally no one has children unless they want to. And so there is going to be some level of self-motivation there. I don't think it makes sense to expect that ever is not going to be there. I think that is potentially a way to think about it. A kind of alternative framework of ethics is utilitarianism, which focuses more on the consequences of an action or actions. And so as opposed to thinking about the inherent rights that a person or, whether that be a human or a non-human animal, the inherent rights that they have or the inherent duties that we have to not do certain immoral things. It's just really, the consequences matter. I think, again, when it comes to breeding animals, regardless of, the purpose, it causes those animals a lot of suffering. In almost all cases, even if you're buying what is marketed as humane meat, if you're buying pets from breeders that you think are more ethical, in almost all cases, those animals are going to be living in poor living conditions. There are, animals raised for food. Very often they're living in extreme confinement. They're deprived of food and water, even if they're marketed as free range. They're going to have experiences like that when they're being, trucked off to slaughterhouses, improper care, when it comes to pets, for example, There's a lot of genetic defects. Young babies being separated from their mothers is something that causes suffering in and of itself. And that happens if you're, if you're extracting milk from cows, or you're raising animals to sell the offspring as pets. Those young babies are separated from mothers, from their mothers. And that's traumatic for them. And there are, you know, I think it's kind of, just goes without saying for people, for example, who adopt like a young puppy, that that their puppy kind of has that separation anxiety from being separated from their mother at an early age. And then there's the case, the fact that there's just excess, in quotations, excess animals being killed in all of these industries. So, for example, when it comes to cats and dogs in Australia, about 250-260 cats and dogs, healthy cats and dogs, are killed daily in Australia, because, you know, they're taken to pounds or shelters, and there are, you know, there are too many for those shelters to be able to care for them. They're not able to just live on the streets kind of happily and in harmony with the native animals or with humans, and so they get taken into shelters. 260 cats and dogs are killed daily in Australia. Animals are slaughtered early in their lifespan if they're raised for food, and these are with using methods that optimize efficiency, not painlessness, even if it's so-called humane meat or animal products. And so, yeah, I think it's pretty clear that breeding animals causes a lot of suffering. When it comes to pets, the animal that was bred to be, you know, your pet, if you're thinking of buying an animal from a breeder, that pet might have a loving home and experience lots of pleasure with you. So you might think that, well, you know, regardless of where they came from, I think my pet has a really happy, healthy life and they experience a lot of pleasure. I think that's probably the case for a lot of animals, but I think it's also really important to consider the conditions of that pet's mother, who's, you know, being bred. What are her conditions like? And then, you know, the excess, so-called excess siblings of your pet, that's very common, that those are going to be disposed of, like killed or abandoned. And then excess homeless animals. So like I said, all those animals out on the streets, and then brought into shelters who get killed every day. So yeah, I just think it's important for people to consider, does this justify the enjoyments you're going to get from having a purebred animal, if that's kind of your motivation for buying from a breeder, or maybe you want like a little baby animal that is raised, that you raise from a very young age. Lots of vegans are pretty on the same page when it comes to these animal issues, and we kind of advocate for even non-vegans to definitely think about these issues. So then when it comes to humans, do we think that being brought into the world as a human brings that kind of same level of like an inexcusable amount of suffering? I'm not really sure if I don't agree that bringing a human into the world causes an inexcusable amount of suffering to that individual if that child is wanted and loved. I think an argument is that it might be an excusable amount to the rest of the world. So, you know, if you're bringing a child into the world and they eat meat, turn out to eat meat, even if you try and raise them vegan, is that kind of on the balance of things from a utilitarian perspective, is that doing more harm than good? I think there's something to this. I think that's, you know, some, it makes sense that people would consider this. I'm not sure I'm like totally convinced about that. I get that we can't fully control who our children turn out to be, so you are kind of running that risk that your child might have what you consider to be like a net negative influence on the world, no matter how, you know, what you, how you try and raise them. But I wonder if it's worth kind of thinking at the group level, you know, is it acceptable to assume that more compassionate and more radical people are going to raise more compassionate and radical children? And maybe, you know, at a group level, even if there are some kind of, you know, exceptions of, you know, people turning out to be less compassionate or, yes, less progressive than their children, than their parents, sorry, you know, is that kind of, is that potentially going to contribute towards a more positive difference in the world? I don't think anyone who doesn't want children has a duty to. I'm not a pronatalist. But, yeah, I think that's, to me, has a bit of a, kind of potentially makes it permissible for vegans and people who really care about the world to raise a birth a child and raise a child if they want to. Yeah, and so I guess thinking from both these like rights-based and kind of consequentialist frameworks, my conclusion is that human birthing a human baby, it brings some risks, but it's not like so black and white to me, and breeding animals for profit to me is far more reprehensible. So I think that one is a bit more black and white to me. Yeah, and I think, you know, people are going to come to different conclusions. It might help to kind of think you think about these issues using these different ethical frameworks. So I'm going to go to a song now. This one is called The Pill by Loretta Lynn. This is about the contraceptive pill. And I think this is kind of an interesting one because it has lyrics like, I'm tearing down your brooder house because now I've got the pill. So it kind of uses the analogy of chickens being kind of like bred. And I think kind of makes light of the issue, to be honest. I don't think it's really a, an animal rights kind of song, but thinking about it from an animal rights perspective, I think it kind of highlights that, like, well, yeah, you know, if women shouldn't be forced to birth children that they don't want to, why should we be forcibly breeding other animals? So let's go to that song now.
Freedom of Species thanks Animal Free Science Advocacy for their financial support of this program. Animal Free Science Advocacy works to create a future where no animals are harmed in the name of science. And scientific progress is advanced through animal-free research methods. Become a member today by visiting animalfreesci.org.au. That's animalfreesci.org.au.
Your station, your voice.
Do a bit of disrupting and cause a bit of ruckus in the colony.
Always was, always will be.
Not celebrate Australia, but instead pay homage to the resistance of First Nations people against this illegal colonial occupation.
3CR, your station, your voice.
This country's black future is a fire.
Welcome back to Freedom of Species on 3CR Radical Radio. I'm Lottie, and today I'm talking about human and non-human reproduction and adoption. So continuing the conversation, or the monologue rather, I guess, I think a question or an option that has been framed maybe to people who see the issues potentially of bringing children into the world, some of the ethical issues, is that, well, you can adopt a child and that's a kind of good old, an ethical alternative. So here I'm drawing on a book chapter called Veganism, Anarchism and Adoption by Nathan Poirier and John Tallant. This is in the book Veganicism, Making Veganism and Anarchism Dangerous Again, which is edited by Will Bosso and Nathan Poirier. So in this chapter, Poirier and Tallant argue that adopting children is more in line with vegan values than reproducing children, and that, you know, vegan antinatalists who wish to raise, who kind of have that urge and desire to raise children, can adopt. So they say, we're both ethical vegans, as are our partners, and we will not create our own biological children. This is due to not wanting to add to the already large and growing population with its intrinsic negative environmental and social consequences. Further, this is also because so many parentless children also exist who want and need stable and loving homes. So I want to, you know, start by saying I agree with a lot that Poirier in particular. I haven't read or heard anything else by John Tallant, but Nathan Poirier, I read their book, their other book, Veganicism. And so, you know, these writers, they're vegans, they're anarchists, they're not advocating for coercive birth control measures, which is in line with my values. And like them, I also agree on the importance of people not having children if they don't want to, and kind of building a society where people aren't pressured to have children that they don't really want. But we kind of, we differ when it comes to framing this adoption, I guess, as an alternative to birthing children. So they say in this chapter, the same ethical reasons to adopting human children as those apply as those for adopting non-human animals. So from a non-anthropocentric position, we see no difference between adopting a non-human animal and a human child. So they kind of talk about that, you know, this desire to become a parent is probably the best argument to becoming a parent, but this can kind of simply be accomplished via adoption without creating more children. So what I think is really important for people to think about, and for us as activists who are maybe, you know, against pronatalism, whether we're for reproductive justice or whether we're antinatalists outright, is that I think it's really important that adopting and fostering children needs to be child-centered. It needs to really focus on what is best for a particular child. I think it's a little bit dangerous to kind of frame it as a solution to infertility, as a solution to like antinatalism or like fear for the future, that, well, I don't want to bring a child into the world, but I still really want to be a parent, and so I'll just adopt, and that will kind of tick that box for me and kind of fulfill this urge. So I'm kind of drawing on a couple of adoptee advocates that I've heard about and consumed some of their stuff. So Ale Cardinale is on TikTok at Wild Heart Collective, and she's appeared on various podcasts. If you look her up, for example, Adoptees On. She is a transnational. She was a transnational adoptee. She was adopted out of Brazil into the USA, and Carlos Dillard is a transracial adoptee. First was in the foster system and then was adopted and experienced a lot of trauma there. So both of them and a lot of adoptees kind of acknowledge that adoption itself is kind of a traumatic process. Being separated from your family is trauma, no matter how well it's done and no matter how well like an adoptive parent tries to, you know, raise their child, there is going to be trauma there, and that needs to be understood. And my view is that usually it's going to be extended family or community that's going to be the best place for a child, not some stranger out there who doesn't want to have their own child or maybe can't have their own child, and so just wants to bring in this outside child to kind of fulfill that urge. I do think that in the world we live in, there are children who are in out-of-home care, and so maybe fostering or caring for someone else, a child that you didn't birth, is going to be a good choice and an ethical choice for various people. But I don't really agree with just framing it as a simple solution, a simple alternative to birthing a child. I think some numbers that might kind of help understand this, and Poirier and Talent are from the US, and in Australia the situation is quite different. So in Australia, abortion's legal, even if it's not, perfect in terms of its access. And so in Australia, adoption means full parental rights are legally transferred to adoptive parents, as opposed to when a child is taken into out-of-home care without their parents giving up their parental rights. So in the two-year period from 2024 to 2025, there were only 84 Australian children who were adopted by an unrelated adult. In contrast to that, so that's 84 children in a two-year period. There are about 26 million people living in Australia. In contrast, 250 healthy dogs and cats are killed every day in Australia. So there is just this very big distinction between the number of dogs and cats who are kind of in excess and therefore are being killed, compared to the number of children that are out there, that you kind of hear this narrative of like, well, there's, lots of children out there who need a home. There aren't that many children in Australia where abortion's legal where their parents are kind of voluntarily giving them up. In contrast, in the USA, where they don't have very good abortion rights, there are about 25,000 private adoptions every year. So that kind of equates to the USA having 200 times more private adoptions than Australia per capita, if you adjust for population. So in Australia, we do have children in out-of-home care, including long-term guardianship. In June 2024, there are about 45,000 children in Australian out-of-home care, but 55% of those were living with a relative or kinship carer. So about 20,000 were not with a relative. This kind of comes back to, if possible, a relative is usually going to be a good person to care for a child if a person's biological parents aren't the right people to care for a child. In Australia, in the US, around the world, poverty is accepted as a driver of children living in out-of-home care and a failure to reunify with parents. For example, in the USA, there were 330,000 children living in the foster system at a given time. 13% of entries into foster care were for physical abuse, which I think, is less controversial, that if a child's being physically abused, they probably need to be removed from their parents. But, there were the remaining 55% removed from their families was due to neglect, which is defined broadly to include a failure to provide adequate food, shelter, supervision, medical care, or education. 31% was for parental substance abuse, 9% for domestic violence in the home, where maybe, one parent should be removed from that family, but the other shouldn't, and the other needs to be given protection and care. And then 9% of children in foster care were because of inadequate housing. So I think if the, if the state is providing these kinds of care, like food, shelter, medical care, education, a lot of these foster care cases are going to decline. And I really think that this needs to be a priority when we think about policies for children, as opposed to, you know, only focusing on, well, we need more foster carers so that, you know, these children who don't come from, you know, good homes can, you know, can just be kind of inserted into this other loving home and everything will be better there. Another little fact check, I guess, from Poirier and Tallard's book chapter. So they say that according to UNICEF, there are approximately 153 million children who are orphaned and waiting for families worldwide. When I looked into this information, it's actually 140 million children worldwide have lost one parent, and it's about 15 million children worldwide who have lost both parents. So that's 10% of the number that they cited. And then from the information I could find, the vast majority of these children live with extended family. So, you know, sadly, they might be double orphans, meaning they've lost both parents, but they're not just waiting for, they're not living in orphanages waiting for families. And then I also read that approximately 80% of children in orphanages outside the US globally have one or both parents alive. Poverty, disability, emergencies, and lack of access to basic services are some of the reasons children end up in orphanages. And this is information that I got from the Christian Alliance for Orphans. I'm not an expert in this, so anyone is welcome to write in at fozradio@proton.me with feedback. But yeah, these were the numbers I was able to find. And so it kind of changes the picture a little bit. If we, you know, like Poirier and Tallant are saying that, oh, well, there's so many children worldwide who need a loving family, a stable family. You know, more people who want to become parents should just adopt instead. I think it's a bit, it's more complicated than that. There are fewer children who are just outright have no family and need to be adopted into a family. And again, I think socially we should be working towards reducing the number of children who need to be removed from, you know, either their parents or if not, you know, their extended family should be the kind of the second option if it's not safe for them to continue living with their parents. Another thing to consider is that adoption is a for-profit industry. So I'll add two articles to the show notes. One is called The Baby Brokers: Inside America's Murky Private Adoption Industry, published in Time. And the other, it was published on The Conversation, called The Politics of Orphans and the Dirty Tactics of the Adoption Lobby by Patricia Froneck. Yeah, when it comes to adoption in the US, for example, private adoption is a for-profit industry where baby brokers connect babies with adoptive parents, and adoptive parents pay like tens of thousands of dollars in fees. There are reports of birth parents being coerced against changing their minds and keeping their child, even if they might want to. So it's really not as simple as just someone gets pregnant, they definitively don't want to raise their child, and so they give them up for adoption. And likewise for, you know, internationally, like I said, many children who are adopted internationally are not orphans, they have families. So I think coming back to that framework I thought I was, I spelled out before of using children or animals as a mere means, I think adoption also runs the risk of using children as a mere means if they're adopted through for-profit industries. So I think it's, yeah, really important to just think about how, you know, how these industries work and whether it's really, whether we really want to be promoting kind of like widespread, you know, an uncritical adoption of adoption. In Australia, the system is quite different, and so much fewer children are adopted. They're put into foster care. They're given permanent guardianship, but parents parental rights are not given up. And, you know, they have the this they retain that connection to their parents. I think that's really important. And so I wouldn't necessarily be I'm definitely not talking people out of becoming foster parents, and especially in the Australian system, which, you know, is definitely not perfect, but I think is a lot better than places like the US. And I think that is a much better option than, for example, international adoption, which I think is seems very unethical. So, yeah, I would just encourage people, really, if you are thinking of adopting a child, to do a lot of research into the, you know, specific to your country and where you're going to be adopting from, to consider, is that really an ethical choice? Yeah. So I think I'll go to another song now. This one is called Us and Pigs by Sophia Isella. This kind of, again, brings that comparison to, you know, women having children they don't want, and without means to contraception or abortion, and forcefully impregnating and breeding animals. So one of the lyrics is, "So pump us full of sperm, put us in a barn, us and pigs on a Mississippi farm, in 9 months we'll have a kid you won't care about."
Freedom of Species would like to thank Project Fresh Start for their financial support of this program. Project Fresh Start provides free plant-based food to the community, with a focus on providing healthy, fresh plant-based food and education around healthy eating and living in a way that sustains the individual, the community, the animals, and the planet. To find out more about our community lunches and programs, check out projectfreshstart.org.au.
Kefirs are Palestinian scarves, and they're a symbol of support for justice for the Palestinian people. From the traditional black and white kefir to an array of modern designs, explore the range and order online or drop by 3CR during business hours. Wear your support for the rights of Palestinians. Go to kefirs.org.au. That's kefirs.org.au. A 3CR supporter.
Welcome back to Freedom of Species on 3CR Radical Radio. I'm Lottie, today talking about human and non-human animal reproduction and adoption. So I've been kind of talking through, firstly, reasons that I think it's really important that people adopt non-human animals. But then I talked about some kind of, you know, complications with the adoption industries across the world and adopting children. So I don't see that as a kind of straightforward alternative to parenting. If you want to become a parent, adopting as opposed to birthing a child. So in the book chapter that I mentioned by Nathan Poirier and John Tallant about veganicism and adopting, they talk about adopting humans and non-humans as a kind of consistency across species. So, you know, they make the argument that, well, if you think that it's more ethical to adopt non-human animals, it's kind of hypocritical to not also advocate for adopting humans. Children. And I, for reasons I outlined before, don't really agree with this, but I do like the idea of thinking about what is a consistency across species that we as vegans, who also really care about social justice issues, can kind of apply to this. So I think it's a bit simplistic to say that, well, adopting non-human animals is better, therefore adopting humans also must be better. But what I do think some of these principles across species we can maybe apply are coming, you know, agreeing that neither children nor animals should be commodities. Next, that children's needs and animals' needs should be paramount and not the kind of desires of the would-be adopter. When it comes to deciding whether a child or an animal is best placed to be adopted. And then I think that for both children and animals, staying with family or kin should be the priority if possible. So if we agree with these principles, what does this kind of mean when it comes to adopting human children or animals? So I think for humans, some of the things we should be fighting for is contraception and abortion access, so that no one is birthing children that they don't want to. And then I think we should be advocating that a child being adopted to a stranger is going to be a last resort, and especially a child being adopted outside of their community or even internationally. So I think that, if a child does need to be removed from their parents, from living with their parents, then retaining connection with their parents and retaining connection with their family and their community should be retained as long as it's safe and okay for the child. I think we really should be advocating to reduce poverty and some of those drivers that lead to children, it not being safe for children to live with their parents. So that would probably look like, housing, financial support to parents, providing mental health support, substance use treatment, and protection from domestic violence. And I think resources need to be spent to prioritize reunifying parents and their parents and their children, if it's possible and if it's safe. And then I think it's really important to advocate that adoption and out of home care shouldn't have a profit motive behind them. As vegans, we can understand that once a person of any species is kind of there's a profit behind what happens to that person, then that tends to lead to unethical practices. And then when it comes to animals, a consistent kind of approach would be that, acknowledging that adoption is a harm reduction approach that keeps animals off the streets or keeps them from being killed, and therefore it's generally going to be positive to adopt an animal to live with you in your home. And that on the flip side, animals should not be bred to be sold for profit, as this leads to a lot of unethical practices. Another principle I think that we can think of that applies between humans and animals is that bonded pairs should be kept together if possible. So, if they're siblings if we're talking about pets, parent-child pairs, sibling pairs, if someone has the resources to adopt a bonded pair, that's going to be generally a lot nicer for those animals being allowed to stay together than being separated. For humans, we have the ability to make the decision for ourselves. Do I want to have children? Do I want to use contraception? Unfortunately, with domesticated animals, they've been bred into this situation where they do require our care, and we're not in a situation where we can ask individual animals, do you want to be a parent? Do you want to be neutered? With that kind of cross-species difference, I think when it comes to non-human animals, that neutering and spaying animals, it reduces the number of animals that are going to be abandoned or killed. And so I see this as a harm reduction strategy. I think another thing something to just kind of end on is that I think maybe as social justice advocates and as vegans who care a lot about social justice, if we care about the environment and maybe the role that bringing new people into the world plays on the environment, I think there's definitely a space to really radically rethink what we want parenting to look like. Some of my more like blue sky utopian thoughts on what parenting you know, ideally might look like is that rather than this over-reliance on the nuclear family where a child is raised by a mom and a dad, sometimes two moms, sometimes two dads, sometimes one parent, but very rarely more than two parents, and definitely, you know, certainly very rarely more than two parents in a single household, I think, you know, maybe it would be really positive to normalize larger groups of, you know, whether they're made up of couples or polycules, but also just friends, extended family, living together and raising children together rather than this reliance on the nuclear family. I think this would have a lot of positives, including adults who have that desire to raise children can kind of do so and experience that without, while having fewer children per person. So, you know, if you've got four adults raising one child, for example, that's fewer children per person that have been brought into the world, and those adults still get to experience that fulfillment of child rearing. It also takes the pressure off. You know, I know personally for myself, I do have that desire to raise a child, probably to become a parent. But it's the idea is also quite stressful as well. And so if we lived in this world where it was more normalized for several people to raise children together, I think that would be, you know, positive for a lot of people. Of course, there would probably still be single people and couples raising children, and that would be okay too. And then I think that would have positives for children as well because, you know, the more parents or parent-like figures that a child has, maybe the less risk that if one of their parents is, you know, maybe not totally resilient or kind of has, like suited to being a parent, where maybe in a single parent or a double parent family that might lead to kind of neglect and, yeah, that child not being kind of emotionally nurtured to their full extent, the more adults that a child is kind of raised by, kind of it shares that load, and it kind of, you know, might increase the chances that child overall gets their needs met when across all the adults in their life. I don't think that currently across the world generally adoption kind of proposes this radically different model of a family. I think it kind of reinforces it. I think the way it's practiced is usually, you know, people who can't have their own but birth their own children just kind of see adopting a child as a way to just bring in another child and try to kind of just replicate that that kind of traditional family structure. But I do really encourage, you know, if people are thinking of adopting, you know, and especially somewhere in Australia where parental rights aren't given up in children for out of home care most of the time, thinking about it as not that I want to have I want to adopt a child and bring this child into my house and I'm going to be their parent, but thinking about it as, you know, there are children out there who can't live with their parents and, you know, maybe can't even live with their extended family. I would love to be a support person who brings these a child or some children into my home and gives them some of the stability and love that they need, while also, you know, supporting them to retain that connection to their family and their parents and their communities. And that's a lot of work. And so, you know, I would love for more people to consider that. I also kind of accept that that's not going to be for everyone. And so I, you know, personally don't think that people choosing, you know, landing on, okay, I'm going to birth my own child is, you know, ethically wrong. But I think, you know, considering all these different options out there in an ethical way is really important. So it's time to wrap up now. Stay tuned for rotations to hear some more music. Today, Marissa, Rob and Brendan are going to be on playing punk and metal music. They're the hosts of Doing Time, which is on 4 to 5 on Mondays, which is about people's lived experiences of people who have been prisoners in the criminal justice system or migration detention centres. Check out that show as well. I'm Lottie. You've been listening to Freedom of Species. This last show, this last song I'll end with is called Nobody is a Product by Adele Tomlin, who sings under Dakini Songs. And a lyric from this song is, I stand with cows, with the rivers and trees, with every stolen mother begging to be free, cannot call it care while the mothers cry, and that nobody is a product. Thanks for listening and see you next time.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.